Chapter 33. Nia arrived for Ruby's funeral, which was taking place at a plain brick building with small windows and a wooden door. There was a notice board with the words in black: "The Righteous. Phone this number for details of services." The words "All are welcome" were nowhere to be seen. Nia had never seen a religious building like it. She ventured inside. The entrance room was as plain as the exterior, painted a sickly cream colour. There was a table with small black hymn books piled up, and next to this stood a steely-faced man in a black suit. He handed hymn books out, but there was no funeral order of service, and once inside the main hall, Nia was directed to a seat at the back with other residents of the close. They all sat silent with the terrified air of pupils waiting to go in to see the headmaster. The hall was painted the same horrible yellow cream colour as the entrance hall. The seats were long brown wooden benches. On one wall were painted the words, "All your righteousness is as filthy rags." Nia was fighting the urge to get out of the building as quickly as she could. The judgment in the air was stifling. Richie was sitting at the front with his father. The coffin stood alone and bare. No flowers graced the top. Nia looked around for Jade. She didn't recognise her at first. She was a few rows behind Richie, hunched over, wearing a black veil, the same as all the women close to her. Nia was wondering what was missing, then realised there was no music. The place was silent. Another man in a black suit stood up, spoke briefly about the sadness of death and grief. Ruby was described as someone who, like us all, tried hard to live to the standard expected of us, but of course, like us all, she failed. A hymn was sung, unaccompanied, and Nia, who usually enjoyed singing, sang a note before realising only her voice could be heard, and stopped. The same man prayed, but not from a book, appearing to make it up as he went along, far more sermon than prayer. It felt to Nia like an endless, depressing list of everyone's shortcomings and mistakes, scattered throughout with pleading for love and forgiveness. Nia remembered Jade talking about being made to feel so terrible here that she slowly became totally dependent on the religion for everything. And Nia tried to imagine how it had been for Richie, Jade, and Ruby to have had to listen to this kind of thing week after week. It must have slowly ground away at any self-esteem they had. Finally, there was another hymn, then some of the men in suits carried the coffin out in silence. Richie walked with his father behind it, his hands crossed over in front of him, the knuckles white. The look in his eyes shocked Nia. Dead, unseeing, his mouth tight. He didn't look their way but left the building with the coffin and his father. It was a strange end to the service, and no one was sure what to do. Jade came over to them. Her eyes were red, her mouth pinched in a way Nia had never seen before. "We can go to the crematorium now," she said, and tore off the veil. When they had left the building, Nia felt a sense of relief, as if they had all been holding their breath for the last half hour.
"Bloody hell," murmured Joe. "That was weird. Those people freak me out."
Nia agreed.
"It was a bit heavy. Come on, let's get to the crematorium. I've a feeling that will be very different. I'd like to come to White's, but before I go, I'd like to go and speak to Richie's father."
She looked over and saw he was talking to Ian, which surprised her, as she'd not known they knew each other. Ian had his arm around the other man's shoulder, and they were smiling. Once they had finished, and as she saw Ian walk away, Nia went over.
"I came over to say how sorry I am for your loss," Nia said to Richie's father. Despite his stern expression, she saw real sadness in his eyes.
"I was very fond of Ruby. She was a good wife for Richie. It was the one choice he made after leaving that I approved of. I regret he didn't come any longer, but at least Ruby did. I disapproved, obviously, of Richie choosing a career in the arts, but at least he had her."
Nia saw the cold, granite-like eyes glaring at her. There was no compassion, no warmth there. Nia hoped Richie had received some love from this man, but she guessed it had been measured out in cold droplets, each one accounted for. His gaze wandered over to Richie.
I do hope he chooses his next wife with care. I couldn't support him if he shackles himself to an immoral woman, but he knows that.
Nia was glad that at that point others came to speak to him and she was able to slip away from Richie's father. Richie caught hold of her arm as she walked past him.
I hope everything is okay, you know, about the bungalow.
He shot an anxious look at his father.
I didn't mention it. I knew you wouldn't want me to, she said gently.
Thank you.
I could see your father was very fond of Ruby.
He approved of her.
I hadn't realised Ian knew your dad. I was surprised to see them talking.
Yes, Ian told me he'd met my father through some business a few years ago. They didn't get on then, but today it was all smiles.
Richie shot a look over at Ian that Nia couldn't quite make out, but the coldness in it unnerved her.
I shan't come to the crematorium, Richie continued. This next part should be for Jade. It was good of her to allow the service at the hall. I'll go back to the gallery, maybe come over to White's later.
I understand. I hope to see you later.
Nia drove herself to the crematorium, and when she arrived, she saw people from the close, but also another very different group of people. Some she recognised as clients of Ruby's. There were the people from the helpline and a group of younger people who were like a breath of fresh air after the previous service. Elvira approached them, and they went in together. As she entered the chapel, Nia was handed an order of service, which had on its cover a beautiful and poignant photograph of Ruby on the beach. She was standing looking out at the sea, her face held high, smiling. The music being played was from Ruby's favourite singer, Adele. The eulogy was by the vicar from the church in Yarmouth, who said wonderful things about Ruby's generosity, caring, and her importance to the lives of everyone in the community. Jade read a poem, Joe the words of a song. For all the solemnity of the previous service, Nia realised no one had cried. Here, people laughed, but there were also many tears. At times, she saw Jade shaking with sobs. After the service, Jade took her to one side.
Thank you for being here with me.
It's been a hard day, hasn't it?
Going back to the righteous was not a good way to start. I know I had to do it for Richie and his father, but I find everything about it oppressive. It triggers bad memories.
I was imagining what it must be like to go to such a place week after week, and as a child, when you are so impressionable.
No one realises how damaging that stuff is. It never quite leaves you.
Jade sighed.
Anyway, it's done, and I know one thing. I will never, ever set foot in that building again. At least here I felt I could grieve and remember Ruby. So, are you coming on to White's now?
Yes, but I'll go and check on Romeo first.
Of course. I'll see you there.
Romeo greeted her, as always, as if she'd been gone for weeks, not hours.
I'd take you with me, but I'm not sure how things will go, Nia said to him. Let's go out in the garden and get some fresh air together before I leave.
Feeling refreshed, Nia made her way to White's, where the mood was very different now. Nia reflected that there was often a release of energy after a funeral, and people were drinking and chatting animatedly. Nia heard a loud laugh and saw Ian telling a story to a group of people.
He's been told we can go ahead with the programme, Lucy said to Nia.
That's great, Lucy. You must both be so excited.
Yes, yes, I think I must be.
Nia noticed that the glass of orange juice in Lucy's hand was shaking.
So, what did you make of that first service?
It was a pretty frightening place, wasn't it? Have you been there before?
Never, thank goodness. We did ask once about using their hall for one of our meetings when our own premises were being decorated,
but there was no way they were going to allow us heathen women with our evil sewing in there.
Nia smiled.
That's crazy. Yes, we thought it was very funny. Honestly, you couldn't wish to meet a less offensive, friendly group of women. I made some lovely friends there.
But you said you gave up going to the craft group.
Yes, I went every Saturday throughout January, but then I realised night driving wasn't for me anymore, and Ian and I have been getting very busy lately.
Lucy stood up. I'd better go and remind him of the time. He's due to speak to his agent soon. Lucy left, and Nia saw her tactfully tap Ian on his arm. Ian had been in the middle of a story, and he stepped back, nearly bowling Lucy over. Ian turned apologetically and scooped her into the group, and Lucy looked so tiny compared to him. Was that how Nia herself looked next to Chris? She realised that before coming to the island she had been to so few social occasions without him, and yet here she was, at the funeral of a woman he'd never met, with people who he'd had no contact with. Of course there had been her friends at the salon, but she'd never socialised with them. Her life had centred around Chris and Safi. Nia remembered when she'd arrived. It had felt so daring to have come here, leaving everyone behind, but now it felt almost normal. She had grown to rather like some of the aspects of living in the house on her own, liked being able to come and go as she pleased. Slowly, the volume on the constant commentary she heard in her head of Chris's endless remarks was being turned down. It was as if she was starting to be able to hear her own voice. Later that evening, she and Romeo headed down to the beach, and Nia was surprised to see Lucy there. She hardly recognised her, wrapped up in a stylish waterproof, her headscarf on her head, and sunglasses on.
"Hiya," she said. "I've not seen you down here before."
"No, I should come down more often. You take things for granted when they are on your doorstep."
Lucy looked around. "It's hard to believe that Ruby died here. It's terrible that something like that should happen to someone in our close."
"I can imagine. When I arrived, I remember thinking what a safe place it felt."
"It appears none of us knew Ruby as well as we thought."
Lucy bent down to pick up a shell, but stumbled and was about to fall. Nia grabbed her arm, helped her to stand up.
"Are you okay?"
Lucy took her sunglasses off, wiped her eyes.
"What's wrong, Lucy?"
"Nothing."
"I don't believe you. Something's not right. Look, I've noticed you stumbling, missing things."
"It's none of your business." Lucy spoke firmly, but Nia persevered. She took a deep breath.
"I think I'm just going to have to come out and say this. Lucy, do you have a drinking problem?"
"How dare you? I'm not the only one who has noticed things. Jade has as well. Lucy, you don't have to be ashamed. We can help."
"I am not staying down here to listen to this," said Lucy as she started to walk away.
Nia grabbed her arm.
"Stop, please. Does Ian know?"
Lucy's eyes widened.
"Don't you dare go near him or..."
"Or what?
Did Ruby know and threaten to tell him, or even to scupper your TV and book deals?"
Lucy's eyes narrowed, and she stepped closer to Nia.
"This is too much. Falsely accusing me of drinking is bad enough, but are you implying that I came here that night to hurt Ruby to protect myself?"
"And to save your 5 minutes of fame? And maybe your marriage?" Lucy shook her head.
"You have no idea what you are talking about."
Lucy stepped back, and Nia saw that the panic had disappeared from her eyes, and a cold resolve replaced it.
"I have to go and talk to Ian. I'll come and see you later."
With no further explanation, Lucy left the beach.
"Well," said Nia to Romeo, "that's not got us much further, has it? Come on, let's go for a walk along the harbour front."
The day had brightened up and it was a pleasant evening. Seagulls circled in the sky. The breeze was warmer. The harbour looked empty now without all the magnificent gaffers and their bunting.
The more sedate yachts and dinghies bobbed quietly on the water. As she turned to go back to the town, Nia saw Joe walking towards her, but he didn't see her. Instead, he turned off to walk down a jetty towards a small yacht. Nia saw a young man with golden hair wave to him, and she saw a look on Joe's face that startled her. Why hadn't it dawned on her before? She needed to think. Think about Joe, Lucy, about everything. Back home, she was making a drink, getting ready to settle to watch TV, when there was a knock at the door. "I've come to explain,"